The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly, in on a bank holiday to deal with the weirdest weekend yet. Most arse-about-face set of results since that man made a human caterpillar. Palace at Chelsea, West Ham at Liverpool, Lovren with a performance so chronic it could have been in that film about the fellas from Compton. We draw our conclusions, then we draw a large flower with pointy bits coming out, in Barry's case, as the rest of us discuss Serie A, a shock second round in Italy that saw Chievo top and Juve dicing with the drop. And France, Di Maria's debut for PSG, and Bundesliga, Bayern battering Bayer Borussia Dortmund back and more, and Championship, John Ashdown keeping it real. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Well, some lucky ears out there, eh? I'm looking forward to this. And it's quite a special lineup today. We've got Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Got John Ashdown in.
Hi there.
Good, because we've got some questions to ask you, John. Rafa Honigstein's here.
Hello, James.
And pod debut for Alan Smith.
Hello.
Not that Alan Smith. Or that Alan Smith.
Or that one.
Or that one. Yeah. You're the Alan Smith who's Jacob Steinberg's flatmate.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I don't think we should get into this, should we?
Well, I'm not sure.
I wasn't aware of this development.
Yeah.
Which one's the Neil Morrissey and which one's the Martin Clunes in your Men Behaving Badly set up?
I think it's more Peep Show sort of.
Right. Great. You also write for The Guardian, as well as being Jacob Steinberg's.
Yeah, I think I was just hanging around and decided to bring me in.
Right. That's pretty much how it works, listeners, yeah. As you might have been suspecting. Do you know what? People often complain that the top four is always the top four in the Premier League. Could this be the season? Look at it at the moment. Man City, Crystal Palace, Leicester City and Swansea City. Hey?
Well, everyone got very excited last season and there was talk that Southampton might finish in the top four, and over the course of the season, despite them having, you know, such a good time of it, I think wealth invariably tells and the moneyed cream invariably rises to the top. But it's very exciting at the moment, isn't it?
Vilnius A saying, where could we see a surprise top four finish? Which team has the best chances of doing that?
Man United?
Do you think? I'm not so sure after what happened at the Liberty Stadium on Sunday.
It'd be amazing for Swansea to do it. I mean, they're embarrassing bigger teams as it is with their scouting and with their attention to detail. But the problem is, with another transfer window coming, whoever's in the slightest trouble of not making top four would just go out and buy a few more players. And Swansea won't do that.
But they do transfer windows so much better than everybody else. They could get even stronger.
Yeah, maybe. But it is hard to fight against so many bigger fish.
Right. No, you're absolutely right, of course. But what we're seeing at the moment, what we saw on Sunday, a team that works against a team that doesn't. And Swansea, an example of how things should be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in the lineup, you look at a team and think, actually, this is a really, really good side. And I think they're continually being underestimated. And, of course, you don't see them in action as many times as the bigger teams. So, you know, their exploits get a little bit lost in the noise. But they're extremely well-run club who now also, if I'm correct in saying, have tackled one of the problems that they've had with their training ground and facilities. They're now much better set up. I think a couple of years ago, they used to send their players to train in the local Virgin gym with normal punters.
Right.
And I think they're...
No, John, don't go there.
What?
Anyway, Barry was telling us they've got beds now. Yeah, they're no longer in Virgins for training. They've now got beds at the training ground or something like that. Yeah.
I don't think their success centres on the fact that they do have little sleeping pods in the training ground. But yeah, they've got a great manager. He's made some very shrewd signings. And it's amazing that how impressive... Well, it was. It's not amazing because they're a very good team. But it's considering the money, say, Manchester United has spent by comparison... Just all the glaring inadequacies that are obvious in their team.
What was your favourite bit of the game?
I think Romero's performance.
Oh, really?
Well, it's sort of, you've got in Valdez and De Gea two such talented goalkeepers. Well, Romero, obviously, talented in his own right, but not quite at the level set by De Gea and previously Valdez, where it sums up the chaos at United that still exists. People are saying we've moved up a level from Moyes. Fans seem to be, you know, we're back in the top four where we belong. But there are so many problems still there. And I think the funny thing is that last season, going back, you kind of think that the struggle was that the problems were in midfield. Now they've strengthened midfield so much that up front, obviously lacking, apart from Rooney, don't have any strikers. Hernandez is apparently up on the way out again. And in goal, there's obviously quite a problem as well. You know, probably, possibly the best goalkeeper in the world sitting in the stands. Whether he leaves by tomorrow or not, who knows? But
it's an issue.
It's quite amusing.
I did enjoy the Ashley Williams tackle on Wayne Rooney. That was quite special. I also really enjoyed Louis van Gaal explaining why Gary Monk outfoxed him tactically, because we were too dominant to change, said Louis van Gaal. But it's really neat the way that Swansea bookended his 50 games in charge, you know, that opening defeat against them. And he said before this one, my first match was against Swansea, we lost. Now I have my 50th. I hope we can show how we have improved. What is it, 230 million, as you're referencing there, Alan? And stick on Fellaini is still the solution.
It was a bit embarrassing for Man United. And I think the worry is that Van Gaal, for all his undoubted brilliance, and I think he is quite a brilliant manager in many ways, has a real issue with man management. And it becomes apparent with South Americans for some reason, where he's, even at Bayern, had problems with them. And for goalkeepers, if you pick up Ronnie Rang's amazing book on Robert Enke, the tragic Robert Enke, his world really fell apart when he played under Van Gaal and Franz Hook, the same goalkeeper coach at Barcelona, because they didn't treat him well at all. I think in the book, for legal reasons, Ronnie doesn't go into a lot of detail just how bad it was, but you can sort of read between the lines that he had a horrible time there.
Wow.
And, you know, recent history would suggest that goalkeepers have a particular hard time with him still.
So you say you think in many ways he is a brilliant manager.
Yes.
And he's been very successful. Which bits do you think he's particularly brilliant at?
I think his attention to detail is still something that sticks out. He'll prepare for the opposition with lengthy dossiers. He will set up the team with a very clear idea. I think very few managers have such a clear idea of how they want their team to play. And he's been quite flexible, actually. People thought he was very dogmatic, but he showed with Holland, where he couldn't play possession football, that he can change, and had them playing counter-attacking football and did really well with them. The problem is that he hasn't really done it on a sustained basis at club level, where it's a much more demanding, constant thing where you have to juggle much more than actually coaching a team in tactical terms, but actually have to manage the whole dressing room, manage your superiors. I think that's where perhaps his character isn't suited to that role. I think the reason why Man United and the fans have given him the benefit of the doubt so far is that because his ego is so big, his character is so big, that he looks as if he's got big enough feet to fill these shoes. But I think now in the day-to-day running, he's coming a little bit short.
Right.
And you wonder, I mean, given that his plan B was to stick the big man up top, you know, how much of that is his fault and how much of that is Edward Woodward's fault for not getting in the striker that he clearly needs? When you've lost Van Persie, I mean, Van Gaal sold Welbeck, started last season as well, Falcao's come and gone, Hernandez is going. You know, that's four strikers that have left the club, and the option's not there, and it's not his job at the moment to go out and do the buying. It's somebody else's job.
It's true, but it still, I think, attests to a remarkable lack of faith in his own system, eventually. And I think that's what's worrying. If a manager like him, who's so convinced by himself, is so self-assured, starts doubting his own tactical setup and reverts to just hoofing it up front, I think that's when you feel that he himself maybe doesn't quite know how to get the best out of the side.
Were you doing the rumour mill this morning, John?
I did, yeah.
Oh, right, OK. So you probably had lots of talk of Man United hitting the panic button marked send €50 million to Monaco for unproven 19-year-old Anthony Martial.
Indeed, yeah. And apparently, according to fairly well plugged-in people in France, that seems to be a genuine possibility.
All right. We saw him in action Sunday night, didn't we, Rafa? £50 million's worth?
Did we see him in action?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I don't remember him touching the ball, actually.
No. All right. Talk of Charlie Austin as well, from producer Ben. I'm not sure where he grabbed that one from. Talk Sport and tabloids.
That must be true.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway.
There's strong rumours in Dortmund that Januzaj is perhaps going out on loan, which would be even more.
Januzaj?
Yeah. Remarkable. To Dortmund from
really?
Man United.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be interesting. That would be interesting.
Is that based on Herrera playing the number 10 role yesterday?
No, it is actually based on well-sourced information from Dortmund to local journalists, not just Sky sources.
You with your well-sourced information,
yeah.
Rafa. Yeah.
Well.
Swansea amazing. Mata took the lead, and then it was Ayew first, and then Ayew for Gomis, and then the Gomis celebration. Which I don't understand why people don't love Gomis in his celebration. His panther
brilliant.
Emerging from the primeval mud, or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love it?
People.
People.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Next up, Man United are going to be hosting Liverpool. This is after the international break. A Liverpool side that will have no Coutinho because he got sent off by a kind of Judge Jeffreys-esque performance from Kevin Friend. It was Kevin Friend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the West Ham Liverpool. Does it get any weirder than this? West Ham, either side of home defeats to Bournemouth and Leicester, win away at Arsenal. And for the first time in 52 years, Liverpool. Alessandro Buongiorno says, hard not to consider West Ham as genuine title contenders next year, seeing as they'll be playing all their games away from Upton Park. Interesting point, that, actually.
This brings us on to performance by Liverpool, I must say. A puzzling performance.
Yes.
Because they've been fairly impressive away to Arsenal. I think it surprised a lot of people just how well they played, especially in the first half. And
well, they didn't do as well as West Ham did it at Arsenal.
No, but even the much maligned centre-back pairing of Lovren and Skrtel looked actually really solid.
Mm.
Now, you wonder, did they look solid because Liverpool played really deep and actually had three holding midfielders most of the time ahead of them, certainly in the first half, or are they just very up and down, very unreliable?
You kind of touch on there one of the developing themes of this season, which is the total absence of home form. Sunday brought a couple of home wins, but even with them, I think you've only had 9 home wins in 30 matches in the Premier League so far. And people have been casting around for reasons as why that might be. Danny Higginbottom, actually in the Independent, or whoever was writing the article for him, coming up with a fairly neatly put explanation, which I could buy into a bit, which is basically that everybody wants to play on the break these days. Everybody just wants to counterattack. And of course, when you're the home side, because of the crowd, because of whatever other reasons, you're less likely to do that. So if you can grab that early goal and just hit people on the break, and that's why, for example, West Ham can do so well when they're away, when they can just sit back and then exploit other people's mistakes. When they're home to Bournemouth and Leicester, not so much. And Crystal Palace would be a great example of this as well. They did brilliantly on the road with Pardew, not so much at home.
And you wonder if that's a kind of a result of some of the big teams being able to spend the huge amounts of money and perhaps the gap threatening to get so wide between the haves and the have-nots that so much of the Premier League now want to sit back and essentially have to play like that.
Right.
And it's kind of, yeah.
And Arsenal, for example, you could make the argument, were you Dagenham and Bottom and whoever's writing the article, that, for example, what would have been a great game for them to try and counter-attack in effectively was ruined for them when Mitrovic got sent off 15 minutes in and then Newcastle could effectively just sit back and it all swung around. But we haven't talked yet. We haven't found an explanation yet for what happened to Liverpool or what happened to West Ham. What?
I think you've got to put it down to that guy who tweeted before the game that if we win at Anfield, I'll get a tattoo in my arm. About an hour after full time, he tweets a picture with a scoreline and the three scorers on his forehead.
Did he actually get a tattoo?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm not sure I buy that. I saw the photo because it looked... If you get a tattoo...
Mm. Is it all red?
Freshly, yeah. Your skin is all red.
Have you got any tattoos?
No.
Has anyone here got a tattoo? I bet you have, Rafa. No. You don't have a tattoo? No. Asher, your brother's...
I'm the only one of my siblings that doesn't. Yeah.
Really? What do your brothers have?
My brother has blades along the bottom of his back.
All right.
And SUFC across the top of his shoulder blades.
Classy.
Yeah.
Well, it's slightly till classy. I die? Is he having that done?
No. Okay. None of that. My sister, I don't know if she might have got it removed, actually, but she did have a Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh on her shoulder blade for a while. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very touching.
Yeah.
You've got one, haven't you, listener? Yeah. All right.
But anyway, that tattoo looked far too clean and old to be genuine. In my opinion, I could be wrong.
Right. Has Jacob had a tattoo done? He must have been over the moon, Alan. Have you seen him?
Jacob doesn't really do over the moon.
No, I know that's true.
He's quietly ecstatic. Is that a possible thing?
A gleam in his eye is probably
I think we all enjoyed, apart from maybe Dejan Lovren himself, that magnificent sequence of play which led to the second West Ham goal.
Yeah, poor old Dejan. Brendan Rodgers was blowing smoke up his nether regions during the week, and I think perhaps he lost the run of himself a bit and decided to show off his tricks, step overs and whatnot, and he just had a terrible game, which could have a very detrimental effect on his confidence, because, you know, after last season he was getting back in the groove and but yeah, what was he doing? I really don't know.
Lanzini looks a player though, doesn't he? He does. I'll just throw that out there. Yeah, he does. He got the first goal. That set up the second.
He was quite impressive in the Europa League as well when he featured against Astra, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Astra Giurgiu.
He was quite impressive in the away leg, obviously, which they ended up losing. But he was one of few bright sparks.
Right.
I think, there were 6 red cards this weekend and in the Premier League, and 2 of them in that game. Mark Nobles was absolutely ridiculous.
I thought Coutinho's was harsh as well.
I thought that was... Yeah, I wouldn't have thought either of them merit. Well, Nobles definitely didn't even deserve a booking.
Poor Charlie Adam as well. What was the story there? You've got to stand somewhere.
Well, I suppose Charlie has previous, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I would imagine that enters referees' thinking. But Charlie Adam's entire back catalogue of red card previous is against Tottenham, I think. So.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Okay. Well, disastrous though, Liverpool's performance and Man U's down in South Wales were, I think... Team in Crisis Strings Award goes to Chelsea and their home defeat to Crystal Palace. Sends a shiver down your spine, that, doesn't it? Anyway, there you go. Chelsea Crystal Palace. Ooh, talk about 2-1 for the Eagles beating the Ego in a very real sense. Although, to be fair, Jose was extra gracious afterwards. He knows when to be a good loser sometimes, doesn't he? He went and congratulated Palace.
And Ellen Pardew doesn't have an ego. So.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But, you know, he can have all the ego he wants after the, you know, magnificent performance like that.
Very impressive. And Chelsea impressively inept and un-Chelsea-like. Very hard to understand what's going on. I mean, one logical explanation is that ominous late start to the season preparation that they've apparently done in relation to last season. They thought we... didn't time it right. We peak very early, then ran out of steam. This time we're going to start a lot later. And according to reports, I think Matt Scott broke the news a while ago, and they only started pre-season 16th of July, coupled with some travelling, etc. So they're clearly not quite ready yet, which is very surprising for Jose Mourinho type team.
It might pay dividends further down the road.
Yeah, but they're already 8 points behind. And wasn't it Jose himself who said that 8 points in the Premier League is like 80 points in Europe?
Did he say that?
Yeah, he did.
All right. How far can Palace go, John Ashton?
Well, I was thinking, when we mentioned earlier on, of the 4 teams that are up there, that I think that Palace are as likely as Swansea to finish in the top 4, which means very, very unlikely.
Yes.
But, you know, you could see Palace finishing 7th or 8th, which would be a fantastic...
Was it 10th or 11th last season?
I couldn't tell you, to be honest.
All right. But they look stronger this time around, don't they?
Yeah, and if they can get through the transfer window closing tomorrow without losing Bellassi, crucially, if they can do that, then, yeah, top half is certainly on the cards.
Mm.
I think the key for Palace is that they've got strength and depth there. They've got attacking options on the bench, because if you look at Wickham has come in, Bamford has come in, none of them featuring that much so far.
Still got Glenn Murray, haven't they?
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing. Alan Pardew doesn't seem to be able to decide who his main striker is. But, it's a nice problem for him to have. It wasn't a huge shock, because it unfolded pretty much how we thought it would when we discussed it on Thursday. You know, I think we were all a bit shy to call for a Crystal Palace win, but certainly everyone gave them a good chance. And Ivanovic had another nightmare. Fabregas is not playing well either, which is having an adverse effect on Ivanovic's game. And it's a real problem there for Jose Mourinho.
Which are the players that are in Jose's envelopes as we speak? Because he hinted that there were 2 or 3 players who are letting the side down. Is it Ivanovic and Fabregas?
Ivanovic and Fabregas, certainly two of them.
And Hazard, I think he was.
Hazard, yeah. Marcy Coyote kind of making the point that should we get off Ivanovic's case? Should he not actually be played as a centre-back, which is kind of what his position originally was?
And it's sort of changed slightly, hasn't it, in the setup in front of Ivanovic, where he did have sort of Willian last season protecting him a bit more, and now he's got Pedro, who just doesn't do the same kind of job tracking back.
I think Willian could be in one of the envelopes as well.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't want to get in Ivanovic's case, but it's the high standards he set himself. You know, they're what he's judged by, and he's not living up to them in any way at all at the moment, which is, you know, it's sad to see, but whether it's a terminal decline or just a poor run of form, only time will tell.
One other contributing factor perhaps to the kind of performance that Chelsea are now turning in is hinted at by Barney Roney in his match report, where he points out that Chelsea were without a single vertebrae from the famous 10-year spine of Cech, Terry, Lampard and Drogba, with Terry currently being out of the picture.
Did he have a nice brown pullover on?
Did he?
Mm.
Okay.
But
Falcao scored, though, Rafa.
I think Terry's involvement in recent weeks was also one of the reasons given why Chelsea were doing badly.
Right,
so
yeah, that doesn't help. Okay, Falcao scored, though, Rafa.
Falcao scored.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great goal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He got in ahead of his marker and a classic finish.
I thought it was a fantastic goal. You know, people seem to think it was just another goal. I thought it was absolutely outstanding.
Do you know, I actually can't remember what happened. Can you just
diving header.
Oh, right, yeah.
Sort of at the near post and got in front of his man, and he didn't have much space to get it into, but it went.
And it went. And then Joel Ward picked one back, put Palace back in front. Hey, some Chelsea stats. Chelsea's four-point total is the second lowest tally at this stage of a Premier League season by a reigning champion ever. The only team that was worse was Blackburn Rovers after they'd taken the title. In four games, Chelsea have now conceded 64%, that's more than two-thirds, of the goals that they did in the 2004-05 season.
Wow. No, it isn't.
It's not. All right, but here's
arithmetic really isn't your strong point, is it, Jimbo?
Only Sunderland have a worse defensive record than Chelsea. Right. Cool. Palace going to be hosting City when we come back from the break in what is a game of first against second, John Ashdown. Wow. We'll get a reaction to that and more after this. John Ashdown, hey, we're heading towards the end of the year. What number are you at?
Oh, beer-wise?
Yes.
327.
End of the year?
I mean, faster than you know. How many days are there till the end of the year?
I work in months.
How many months?
4 months.
Oh, so you've got ages yet?
Yeah, I'm two-thirds of the way through, and I'm roughly two-thirds of the way through. So,
all right.
Yeah, it's going well.
Can you fill me in?
I don't know what Craig David once said.
Yeah.
It might have been.
John, with the passing of the previous year, decided that it was time to mark the passage of time by broadening himself as a man. So he embarked on a quest to drink 500 beers, different beers, in the course of a calendar annum. And it's going pretty well, or ish. 327.
Yeah, it's roughly on schedule. Probably slightly behind, but might be a bit of a sprint finish. December might be a bit of a sprint finish.
Are you finding it more and more difficult to find new beers to drink?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. It's more kind of you have to be a bit more strict with yourself and kind of...
But do you keep a database with you of all the beers you drunk? Because you can't possibly remember 327.
No, I have a spreadsheet at home.
Somebody says, how do you know? Oh, have I had that one before?
I make strict notes on my. I can remember what I've had.
327 different beers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all in.
Are you going to be turning that into a book?
Mm-hmm. No, people have said that to me, but I haven't really.
A movie. I see a movie.
It'd just be 500.
Paul Giamatti is
Spike
Jonze. Yeah, like Sideways, but with beer.
Okay, that could work, actually.
That could work. Listen, I bet you've got a special beer that you're saving for beer number 500. Am I right?
Do you know what? I haven't. Any suggestions for beer 500? The thing is, beer 500
That's what it would be called, the film, beer 500.
The 500th will be sort of at 5 to midnight on New Year's Eve, so it might be best not to save something too memorable for that.
Right. What are you going to do next year, John?
I don't know. I'll just
cut Alcoholics Anonymous.
get healthy again. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You could brew your own for the last one.
Hey, that's true.
Although I have had Tommy Turbo, Tom Bryant, works with us I've had one of his home brews.
Tommy Turbo.
Yeah.
It sounds like Turbo. A different kind of...
yeah. All right. Anyway.
Actually, on the subject of sort of anorecky obsessions, there's a guy at TalkSport called Tony Incenzo, who tonight, Monday, is going to FC United's new ground to watch a game, and that will be the 2,000th different football ground he has watched a game
really?
At. Over his career. The same fella has not missed a QPR home game since 1973.
Good Lord, how old is he?
Not particularly old. He's, to say, maybe late 30s, early 40s.
Wow, maths isn't my strong point, as you know, Barry, but...
Yeah. He can't be in his late 30s.
What?
He hasn't missed a game.
1973. I tell you what, Man City fans are saying, that's all well and good, but what about our Sterling victory at home to Watford? Three wins, no goals conceded, and as Manuel Pellegrini himself said, for a dead man walking, not bad. Mm.
Did he himself say that?
Well, that's what I read today. Yeah, I think he did. Which is all right, you know, because he's not really shown a lot of personality, is he?
That will be the most interesting thing he has said since he came to England, if he did
say
that.
I hope he said it. Yeah. Kind of game that they could have lost focus in, that they maybe did lose focus in last year, Burnley, Hull, those kind of teams that, you know, exploited their complacency, but they didn't, and they won 2-0. And that means that they've got, 8 points over Chelsea, 5 over United, Arsenal, and Liverpool. Sterling got his first goal, and now they bring Kevin De Bruyne. Okay, let's all have a go at this. Kevin De Bruyne. Because there's a little bit of a Y in there, isn't it? Kevin De Bruyne.
There's a Y in his name,
yeah.
Yes.
Chris Worrell says, Rafa, what will De Bruyne add to City's attack?
Goals and assists.
Bingo.
From
Don't
all
they have
sorts
those?
Of angles. Yeah, but he'll add even more. Fantastic signing, a player that will make everybody play just a little bit better. High action, high pace, doesn't stop running. The only issue, slight issue I foresee with him is that he thrives on having a lot of space ahead of him. And against City, especially now after the great start of the season, I think most teams will be very careful to defend fairly deep, which make it more tricky for him because he's not a dribbler. He's more of a runner, explosive kind of pace setter.
If he's so great, why did Chelsea get rid of him?
I think you'd have to ask Jose Mourinho, but I'd be willing to give them a pass because some players just don't work out and certain managers and feel in order to progress, they need to go somewhere else. I mean, think of Paul Pogba and Man United. Nobody's saying, haha, Fergie, you idiot.
Well, I think a lot of people have.
Well, actually. Maybe they are. but it was the right move for him. He needed that game time. He's 24 years now, and if he hadn't left Chelsea... He would probably only have half the starts he'd amassed over the last 2 years.
And but in that incredible Man City...
a completely different player.
Yeah, but in Man City, he's going to get those starts, is he?
I think so, because they... Of course, they have lots of depth, but at the same time, will he get in ahead of Navas? Definitely. Mm-hmm. In my view, will he get in ahead of Silva? Perhaps not at home, where you're more reliant on somebody like Silva to unpick the lock. But away from home, I think he's a... amazing option to have. He's even played as a false nine at times because he's got so much pace from starting from deep positions. So I don't think he'll have any problem at all holding down the regular place in a variety of positions.
Wow, the best just got better.
Rafa, has there been a backlash from Wolfsburg fans over his departure?
It's not enough of them to...
really?
They brought in Julian Draxler out of Schalke.
Yeah. No, I mean, the serious answer is that it's been on the cards for such a long time that everybody expected it to happen. Most people thought it's going to only happen next year because at the beginning of the summer season, him and the club had sort of agreed that he'll stay another year. Then City's offer came in, changed sort of his mindset a little bit. But Wolfsburg knew, I think, fairly on into his career that he would outgrow the club eventually. I mean, the guy is a superstar in the making.
Serious point. Is he going to look as good, though, when he's not playing alongside Nicholas Bentner?
That is a problem.
Yeah, okay. Just throwing that out there. Let's talk next about Arsenal and their mighty 3 points away at Newcastle. You were minute-by-minuting this, Barry.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, I did.
It was an entertaining game to watch, you know.
What?
It was.
I did too,
minute-by-minute. Depending on what narrative you were looking for.
What narrative are you looking for?
The Theo Walcott centre-forward narrative.
Right.
And there were some choice examples there, particularly that wonderfully fluffed moment when Krul went down and Walcott really just had the goal yawning in front of him.
Yeah,
I also really loved the moment when Mbemba decided, I'll have a stroll through Arsenal's midfield as though it's not there.
It was not a game that will live long in the memory, I would imagine. I did the minute-by-minute for that, and then I did the one for Spurs-Everton, and by the end of it, I was harbouring thoughts of deep despair, to be honest. But, you know, it was a weird refereeing performance from Andre Mariner, which kind of spoiled the game.
Weird in which way? Arsenal should have had a penalty early on.
He was very... I don't like moaning about referees, particularly because they have a very difficult job, but he sent off Alexander Mitrovic. It was fair enough. I thought it was a red card deserved. But earlier, he had only booked Moussa Sissoko for the same offence or similar offence. Then he should have given Arsenal a penalty and didn't when Hector Bellerin was brought down. I think Arsenal made very heavy weather of winning the game, but they did ultimately deserve
to win.
Well,
they did, yeah. I like the Newcastle players turning up in tuxedos.
Mm.
Did you see that? Here's Ian Burnett being funny. He says, it would appear it's only when wearing tuxedos that Newcastle look equipped to deal with a ball. Especially that Mitrovic fight.
I thought they did okay, to be honest. With
Arsenal or Newcastle?
I thought Newcastle...
It was valiant stuff. Yeah.
It was valiant, but... You know, you probably wouldn't have begrudged them a point if they'd got one, but the game threatened to go out of control shortly after Mitrovic had been sent off. I think at one stage, of the 10 Newcastle players left on the field, I think 6 of them were on bookings, and I was very surprised they actually calmed down and regained their composure, because Steve McLaren was having canaries on the sideline as well, when I think he should have been trying to calm his players down a bit. But they did regain their composure and could conceivably have got a point, but I thought they did pretty admirably.
Now, Barry, goalless between Spurs and Everton, the Harry Kane story, the John Stones story, in a line, John Stones played okay, Harry Kane...
Harry Kane looks like a man whose confidence is completely shot. He missed a very easy chance. Then he was sort of taking pot shots from long range that weren't going anywhere near the goal. I'm not sure why he seems so worried, because, I mean, I don't think he scored last season until November, did he?
Well, he didn't play.
But yeah, just needs one to go in. His arse, as they say.
Saints Norwich, anybody? Sadio Mane, Saints bouncing back from their Midtjylland disaster.
Yeah, I think Stephen Whittaker is sending off for 2 of the most pointless yellow cards. It ultimately changed the game, didn't it? The first one was ridiculous. He tries to stop a throw-in, and then within minutes, I think it was Tadic, he dragged back, but completely needless, because the Tadic one, can't remember the Norwich defender, I think it was Bessong, was coming across the cover anyway. So to get sent off, they buckled under the pressure, conceded obviously in stroke of half time, and then really Norwich had no chance of getting back into it in the second half.
3-0,
that did kill off the game, but Norwich weren't playing very well before he got sent off.
Bournemouth 1-1 with Leicester. That man Callum Wilson again.
Yeah, my note for that game is Wilson overhead kick lovely.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong, John. I like that. Brief to the point. What did you write down about Villa Sunderland, I wonder? 2-2 this one. There were all sorts of talking points. Tim Sherwood pulling a hamstring, poor chap.
Did he? I didn't
apparently he did when he jumped up and down demanding a penalty.
He was getting so excited on the touchline.
What else did you like about this one? Mighty point, Barry.
Two pretty bad teams, I think. Villa probably deserved to win. And Sunderland's kit was rather strange. It looked like they'd sort of 10 goalkeepers playing.
It's a green affair.
All green, yeah. Goalkeeper green.
Yeah. Hey, you got Fabio Barini coming back. At last, the dream move for him.
Well, he's managed to avoid it for 3 windows, desperately trying to go anywhere other than Sunderland. But it looks like he's going at last.
His destiny is manifest. Villa free kick against Villa. Producer Ben wants to mention. And Scott Sinclair has scored how many goals in what? 5 in 2 games? Oh, that'll be the League Cup you're talking about, though, aren't you? Yeah, that doesn't count. That's Dutch goals.
Against Notts County, which was actually a brilliant game, because Notts County scored
3 goals
right
at home to Villa. A real end-to-end, relatively local-ish cup, Midlands Cup tie, which was quite entertaining.
Super. All right.
Do you think if Scott Sinclair keeps up this rate of goal scoring that some big club like City might come in and buy him?
Stoke West Brom, that's the game we haven't touched on yet, and that was a special one. Tony Pulis returning to the Britannia for the first time since departing from the Potters and coming home with a fat 3 points and Johnny Evans as well, providing some much needed cover at the back. West Brom, Stoke, they could be in some trouble this year, methinks. I think they could.
I mean, it was another game really decided by the sending off, wasn't it?
Charlie Adam.
Yeah.
And Ibrahim Afelli.
Oh, yeah.
Afelai.
Yeah.
Afelai.
Afelai, yeah. That's true. Still.
With Stoke, the problem seems to be that Mark Hughes now has so many options, he's not entirely sure of his best attacking team. He's got so many attacking midfielders that who are the best three to...
Yeah, they've like one of those celebrities that has a facelift and it goes horribly wrong, I think. They've got these fat lips and kind of podgy cheeks now, and you just yearn for the simple girl they used to be before. They're the Renée Zellweger of the Premier League, I'm suggesting.
The Leslie Ash of the Premier League.
Equally.
I was going to say Jenna Jameson of the Premier League.
Who is this Jenna Jameson? Time for another one of producer Ben's special pauses after... Yes, he's back, listeners. And then, John, let's rev up the big machine of Championship football and let it loose. Hey, listeners, if you're enjoying this pod, which could happen, and you're thinking, but I wonder what it looks like in person, say, perhaps in a place of worship or an erstwhile place of worship, the good news is that this Thursday we're going to be at Manchester Cathedral as part of the Manchester Football Writing Festival thing, and you can get details of how to buy. There's probably one ticket left. You can find details of how to buy that ticket at a huge market, I imagine, on our homepage. Producer Ben will put a link there. Anyway, if you don't fancy that, but think instead, what I'd like to do is pop down to the shops and buy a great book about German football, then the good news is that your options increase by one as of this Thursday, because your Das Reboot title of the century, Das Reboot, is being published, Rafa, and you're having your launch date on the day that we're all out of town in Manchester.
That's pure coincidence.
I'm nearly finished Rafa's book, and it's very good. I would recommend everyone go out and buy a copy.
Right, okay. You're going to be at that festival as well, but not on Thursday because you're having your launch party.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be done Wednesday.
Wednesday?
Together with Ronnie Wang.
Oh, will you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that'll be good. Tickets available?
Barely.
All right. Act soon, listeners, and act often. Now, Championship. Sorry, John.
That's all right. I spent my time there trying to come up with cathedral-related football puns.
What did you come up with?
Well, Thursday, obviously, is 2 days after the closing of the transept window.
That's really poor, John. Yeah. We don't have to do this.
Will Tony Pulis be on the programme?
I remember when Vespers Olsen used to play for Manchester United.
Championship, John. Brighton's still unbeaten at the top. 4 wins out of 5.
Yeah, and they had a big 3-2 away win at Ipswich at the weekend, who had also started really well. They struggled last season, only just stayed up, Brighton, but the re-arrival of Bobby Zamora seems to have lifted the place.
Wow, he's back there now, is he?
He is, yeah. There's a fairly terrible vine sort of slightly doing the rounds of a camera sort of scrolling up to his face and him saying, "I'm back."
Cool.
And it just loops, and with him, so it's worth watching just for the sort of cringe factor. But, right. You know, he's had
productive?
Positive impact than that might suggest.
Oh, good. Okay. Also doing well, Hull and QPR, where Charlie Austin, despite not having any knees to speak of, as far as I understand it, is continuing to score goals. He's now on his fourth of the season. Derby is still winless under Paul Clement.
Yeah, they've had a horrible start, actually. 4 draws out of 5. So they've only lost once. In fact, that first loss came at the weekend against Leeds at Pride Park. Although all the relegated teams, going back to sort of QPR and Hull, they've all started reasonably well.
Burnley too. The other side have gone down. And hey, if you were scrabbling around for a little bit of proof that there is such a thing as karma, how about Joey Barton signing for Burnley, the place where he said, "Thank goodness I don't have to live there," only last season?
Well, he still doesn't have to live there.
Well, that's true, I suppose. But it is funny, him ending up at that club of all places. This, you'll recall, after that fairly ill-tempered Burnley QPR match, which saw possibly some bottles and stuff thrown, and then a bit of an altercation, and then a Twitter spat between a Burnley fan and QPR's Joey Barton, in which Joey said, "We may be overrated, but at least we don't have to live in a, like, Burnley."
Now he's there kissing the badge.
Yeah.
Including a picture when Burnley had their promotion party. He tweeted a picture of a row of tractors saying Burnley fans on their way to the celebrations.
Well, anyway, I've done your championship roundup for you, John.
Didn't have to do anything. There's slightly odd goings on at Burnley. Jelly Vossen, who was a big signing over the summer for £2.5 million, is all set to sign for Club Bruges less than 2 months after joining them. Why are you laughing at that? What's so hilarious about that?
Oh, it's producer Ben who got excited about the fact that his first name is Jelly.
Oh, okay. It's probably not pronounced that, is it?
Probably not.
I think it's Yeller.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
So, yeah, he's off after 2 months. And also at Bristol City, Ryan Fredericks, who joined the club in the summer, is from Tottenham.
Okay.
He's heading to Fulham less than a month after signing down at Bristol City.
How badly are Fulham doing?
He says, glancing at the table. Fine.
Okay.
Can you actually do that? Sign for two different clubs in the space of a month?
I don't know. Well, if the first one came... Because, yeah, there's rules, aren't there? There are rules. I don't know.
There's a tree club rule, I think, for over a 12-month period.
Mm, there you go. What about your side, down in League One, Sheffield United?
Yeah, well, I went to the first game of the season. I took the new Mrs. Ashdown down to...
John! This just in.
not the married Mrs. Ashdown.
Yeah, but
the new one. New other half. Yeah. Right. Down to Gillingham for the opening. I know how to show a lady a good time. Down to Gillingham for the opening game of the season.
Please tell me this wasn't the first date.
I was on fairly steady, solid ground by that point, I like to think. Where United promptly lost 4-0.
All right. You failed to score. Oh, I see. No. But
since then, we've won four in the bounce. So it's clearly the curse.
And how's Sheffield United been doing?
Very good. Yeah. It's clearly the curse of the... You know, she's now been summarily banned from ever attending another game.
What a shame.
Yeah. I bet she's got to it again.
Yeah.
I see Blackpool are anchored firmly to the bottom of League One after last season's disasters, and their shirt sponsors have bowed to public demand and said they won't... Well, they've fulfilled their contractual obligations for this season but won't be renewing it unless there's different owners. And the shirt sponsors are a hotel and leisure group called Village, and apparently on the 18th green of one of their golf courses, someone daubed Oyston out in big white letters.
Right. They could be going down to League Two this season, Blackpool. But they wouldn't meet Leighton Orient down there necessarily, because they might be coming up the way they've started.
Well, they and Manchester City are the two teams with 100% winning records so far. Orient have won 5 out of 5, which is one better than City's 4 out of 4.
Brilliant.
Or Forest Green in the conference have won 6 out of 6.
Brilliant. Okay, another bit of music, and then you can put your headphones back on, listeners. Europe. It's a big continent, and it's full of footballing goodness. Raphael Honigstein, first off, big salute to the Bundesliga fans who held up banners saying refugees welcome, and Celtic fans as well. Celtic were doing this as well. Refugees welcome, created by immigrants. What was behind this? Is this a kind of pan-European initiative, or was it in... How many clubs? There were about 4 clubs, I think, in Germany where the fans held up banners.
I think it was even more than that. No, but the background of this is that this has been the hot political debating point of the summer, because Germany has received thousands and thousands of refugees, much more, I think 10 times as many as the UK. And you've had some really ugly scenes, especially in the east, but not exclusively in the east of the country, with people protesting and throwing rocks and also burning down places.
Buying the Daily Mail, all sorts of really ugly activity.
Much worse than that. No, yeah. Actually setting alight places where asylum seekers were supposed to sleep in, and riot police. So it's a real issue, and a lot of people who are on the right side of the debate have now shown their true colours and have come out in support.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. Nice to see that in this country as well, wouldn't it?
There's another impressive display from German supporters in the second division, where Union Berlin were playing, I think, Red Bull Leipzig. And because they were so annoyed by how Red Bull had invested so much in the team, decided to have 15 minutes of silence in the entire ground at the weekend, which...
Wow.
Quite impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull have had a very hard time, it must be said. They've been boycotted. Clubs like São Paulo have refused to show their logo on their website because they're saying we don't do advertising. I'm not sure I'm entirely comfortable with sort of this idea that they shouldn't be allowed to have a club and, you know, Red Bull shouldn't be allowed to run a football club. Leipzig as a club itself actually a proper side, huge tradition and huge crowds. I mean, they get over 50,000.
Right.
The fact that they are owned and sponsored by Red Bull, I don't think is necessarily...
What would be the difference between them and Bayer Leverkusen?
Yeah, or Wolfsburg.
It's just history. I mean, Leverkusen and Wolfsburg were set up by genuine employees as their playing team of the plant. And then only later, the two companies involved decided to really back them and make them into professional sides. Red Bull Leipzig or RB Leipzig, they're not allowed to call themselves Red Bull, is of course a much more recent case and is seen as everything that's wrong with commercialization and, you know, violating the hallowed traditions of German football. I'm not so sure I see it as that much of a problem. But then I've lived here for a long time.
Right. Interesting top of the table right now in the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich, who had a big game on Saturday against Bayer Leverkusen, who'd had such a strong start to the season under Roger Schmidt. But how good did Bayern look?
Bayern looked absolutely amazing. I mean, no one's going to be surprised by that statement. Everyone is going to say, well, of course, they're the best side. But they had no centre-backs. And Pep Guardiola just made one or two changes, had some ideas, and it worked absolutely beautifully. They had Alaba playing as a centre-back. Alonso almost as a sweeper, so... When Leverkusen had possession, Alonso moved in to make it a back four. When Bayern had possession, Alonso moved into midfield. He played basically like a classic sweeper used to play. And it worked wonderful. And Leverkusen, a team who create a lot of chances every single game, their pressing is so intense, had nowhere to go because Bayern were switching the play so beautifully, so brilliantly, that after 60 minutes Leverkusen were dead on their feet and Bayern just rolled them over. So it's a great performance, but one of those where he's not going to get a lot of credit for, because everyone just says, well, it's Bayern, of course they're winning. Leverkusen though, I think, shouldn't be downhearted by that, because as Roger Schmidt said, well, we lost against the best team in the world. I'm not sure it's the best, but one of the best. But they are the genuine article, I think, under him. They look absolutely brilliant, and they're adding another player with Kevin Campbell. Maybe Chicharito is going through as well by the time
to Bayer Leverkusen.
Leverkusen as
Bayern looking
by
spectacular.
The time you listen to this,
that wonderful Douglas Costa move. It's just going to be interesting to see how much of that kind of showboating and stellar play they'll be able to do when they meet Arsenal in the Champions League group stage.
Yeah. Interesting enough, Douglas Costa was criticised by Ian Robin. For doing that. He said you have to respect the opponent. It's a little bit dubious to do that, and I think he was right. But
it was very effective.
He did a sombrero.
You know that playground move. I mean, a sombrero for me, you would do it with the front part of your foot, as opposed to back heeling it. You know when you grab the ball behind you and kind of double back heel it over your head and over the opponent. Is that a sombrero?
I think so.
I think, isn't it a rainbow flick? Yeah, I'm getting nods from producer Ben, who's down with kids. So anyway, but it's whatever he did special. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing is, Bayern were 3-0 up at the time.
Right.
And, you know, he was somewhere going nowhere. And
when he's got Callum Chambers in front of him, it's going to be another story.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
Did anyone exact a swift and brutal retribution for this act of showboating?
He was kind of pushed in the back, but... Yeah, nothing serious.
There was an awful moment from a women's futsal game, I think, over the weekend in South America, when a player had showboated and had been fouled, but then was resting the ball on the back of her legs while lying on the floor, and the opponent just came up and kicked her in the throat, full throat. Yeah, it was horrible.
Were you minute by minute thing this?
We minute by minute a lot, but not women's futsal from South America, unfortunately.
Don't be putting not yet. Ideas in Doherty's head.
Yeah. impressive though Bayern are, they're not top of the table.
No.
Because who is?
Well, Dortmund are even more impressive now under Thomas Tuchel. 8 out of 8 in all competitions, scoring for fun, creating chances for fun, real pace, players like Mkhitaryan playing at the very top of his game, Aubameyang looking strong, Royce looking strong again. Kagawa looks like a completely different player, or perhaps the player he was before he moved to Man United. All in all, absolutely irresistible from them, and it's great. I think everybody, Bayern included, are quite happy that Dortmund are back and look as if they might be able to push Bayern a bit further than usual.
There might be a title race in Germany. Mm. All right. There isn't probably going to be one in France, is there? We saw PSG continue their perfect start to the season. Haven't conceded any goals. And introducing Ibrahimovic and Di Maria into the fray on Sunday night's game, which looked like their toughest test so far. We saw this, didn't we, Rafa? They were away at Monaco. 3-0 victory for the Parisians. Di Maria joining the fray with a glorious assist for the third goal. And, yeah, very impressive.
It was a walk in the park.
Yeah. No title race in France. There might be one, though, in Italy, because second round of the season saw one of the big, big fixtures. Juventus, champions for the past four seasons, taking on the closest thing they've had to a challenger in the last 2 years, Roma, in Rome. And Roma winning 2-1. Not just winning 2-1, but absolutely dominating this match. Dzeko on the score sheet. Fantastic opening free kick from Pjanic. Oh, Patrice Evra sent off. Yeah, Paolo Bandini tweeting, Patrice Evra sent off, Juve on the ropes, brace yourself for a very different season. Although Richard Whittle responding, I'll check in December, which is maybe fair. But just seeing the way Juve have started, the absences they've had, the way that, for example, Pogba's struggling without Vidal and Pirlo alongside him in the midfield, that it doesn't look like this is an easily resolvable issue that they've got.
No, they still have a lot of talent. And there was a point where they nearly came back and nearly drew the game where you'd see they're still depths of resilience in that team. At the same time, you're just beginning to wonder sort of the perception might have an impact, that people beginning to see Juventus in a different light and feel that they are beatable and they're not quite the same team that they were, and their aura seems to, I wouldn't say have gone, but it's diminished, yeah. I think it's fair to say.
Dybala pulling a goal back, their big signing, I think €30 million they paid to Palermo for him, and he looked lively. They've
brought in an awful lot of players, haven't they? So
they have. A lot of them are injured as well, it's fair to point out, and the likes of Sami Khedira and that.
And they've been uncharacteristically inefficient when it comes to replacing the number 10 position. Mm. They've been looking all over the place, failed with lots of players, including Draxler, and I think they're probably still at least one player short of having the team that they really wanted to have.
We shall see if they can pull anything in by 11 o'clock Italian time on Monday, which is when pretty much everyone's transfer window closes, except for the English, who are all off on a bank holiday. There's no way you can expect football professionals to come in on a bank holiday and settle stuff. Let's be clear about that. Juve, when they return from the international break, will be playing Chievo, John, the Flying Donkeys. You remember them?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, do you know what's exciting about this?
They're top of the league.
They are top of the table, whereas Juve down in the relegation zone. Chievo top after beating Lazio 4-0. Boy, did they look impressive. We saw the goals here. And, the Majorini assist. Rafa, you remember the backfield assist?
No,
I saw that this morning, where he sort of slides towards the byline and cuts it back with a backheel.
Oh, kind of volleyed as well, wasn't it? Incredible. Amazing.
Would you say that, though, not to take anything away from Kiev, would you say that Lazio perhaps suffering a bit of a post-Champions League exit
maybe
hangover?
They are. Maybe they are. But anyway, 4-0 against Lazio. Terrific stuff from Kiev. And yeah, we'll see how that goes when they play against Juventus. Mm. I'm just shuffling my papers because we've reached the end of today's podcast. Many thanks to Alan Smith.
Thank you very much.
Barry Glendening.
Cheers.
John Ashdown. Raphael Honigstein.
By the book.
And producer Ben. And you, listener, thanks for being with us on this a bank holiday. We'll be back Thursday and then again Thursday night for you lucky ones in Manchester. Have a great week till then.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.